Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello, good morning, happy Sunday. Yes, this is Carl Nordgren with episode number 36. I just keep getting fascinated by the fact that they keep asking me back to do this show for you. It's an expansive view on what it means to be creative. You've heard me say that before. You just heard that in the introduction. And today we're going to bring a whole nother dimension to that expansive view with this very interesting guest that I'll be introducing to you in just a second. Before I do, let me just take care of a couple of housekeeping items. I want to remind you that at chapelboro.com, in the town square section, you'll find some columns that I've been writing on this topic of being creative. At 97.9 The Hill, you'll find all these radio shows archived there for you. Go to the events page when you're on chapelboro.com, folks. It's the best events page around. And look for the School of the Living Futures first Saturday. I've been to a couple of these events, and they're outstanding events. One last thing before I introduce our guest, and that is that there's some construction taking place next door. And this is a sound, tight studio. But maybe, just maybe, you might hear a bit of a construction noise at some point today. So I'm excited about this show. There's a couple of firsts here. This is the first time I've had a former student from Knox College. You all have heard me talk about my time teaching at Duke. In the middle of that 14 years, I went back and spent a term at Knox College, my alma mater, a lovely, beautiful little liberal arts school in Western Illinois. And so that's a first. I've got a former student. And this is the first time we've had somebody call in from Nigeria. And so, folks, we are in the studio today with Ladi Lawani. He was a student of mine, as I say, at Knox College. He introduced himself to me in that first class by saying that he was here to learn how to be an entrepreneur so he could bring entrepreneurial knowledge and wisdom back to his country. I had the opportunity to introduce him to an incubator down in Atlanta called The Hub, where he spent a couple of years, I think, really absorbing the entrepreneurial spirit. And boy, it's resulted in a wonderful accomplishment. Ladi was picked a couple of years ago as one of Forbes magazine's 30 under 30 leaders in his country. So, Ladi, there's an introduction for you. Tell us more about it. I'm sure you've got some stories that you'd like to wrap around my introduction for you. Thank you very much and welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you so much, Carl, and thank you for having me. It's such an honor. You know, and I'm happy I could, you know, have this conversation. You know, so as you were speaking, I kind of flashback and I realized that, you know, I caught the entrepreneurial bug in America. Coming to the States, I kind of had a very traditional mindset about careers. My mom was an accountant, dad was a banker, so I figured I'd be one of those two. But then getting to the US, I started to understand this concept of entrepreneurship. And it's safe to say by the end of my first year, I caught the bug. You know, I started to read books and I was just very curious. You know, and I remember when Carl came back to campus, he was, you know, introduced as a successful entrepreneur, which he is. And also just that was the first time we had that kind of curriculum at Knox, because Knox being a liberal arts college, you know, wasn't really business oriented in the curriculum. And so I was super excited, got into the class and, you know, I was just trying to soak up as much as I could. But there was something that Carl said that always stuck with me. And I would say it's fundamental to how I process this as an entrepreneur, because Carl took it from a very, almost also from a liberal arts standpoint. You know, it was the thinking behind it. It wasn't just the how do you get it done, but it was the why. It was the philosophy behind it, which gave me a good foundation. But Carl said that essentially entrepreneurship is pattern recognition, which I still very much think is the case today, is that, you know, you need that critical insight. And to get that, you kind of have to have a sense of the lay of the land and see how that is evolving. And that's sort of been central to how I think today, where I'm able to see patterns and think ahead and essentially take positions many years before. So for instance, my current business, you know, was one where I started about 8 years ago. And, you know, at the time, no one kind of saw the trend. But today, I kind of sit in the middle of the trend. And it's like, it's a no-brainer today. But, you know, it was that sense of what is the pattern? What is the trajectory that kind of led me to that position?
Very nice. Very nice. I sure appreciate that. And pattern recognition, boy, that's so, so important. And that's something that young brains are really, really, really good at. 30-year-old people, 40-year-old people, boy, your brains are just so good at immediately picking up the pattern and the relevant pattern and beginning to predict what should be happening with this pattern. So what was it in your reading of patterns, you know, or in the disconnect of the patterns, what caused this idea and label the idea? Tell us a little bit about that idea as you tell us about how this idea first emerged.
Okay, so, you know, the very first business my business started off from a peanut company. So I started out wanting to become the planters of Nigeria. You know, so I'll take a step back. When I wanted to be an entrepreneur, I went through a phase where I tried every business idea I could think of. And they usually lasted about a week or month or however long, and I'll be on to the next one. And after a few years of that, I kind of got frustrated and I sort of looked back and said, all right, this approach has not worked for you. So you're going to need to be more intentional, right? And you're also going to need to be more long-term. And so I kind of went through this process of elimination to say, okay, what is that niche I want to focus on? And, you know, there were some filters I applied. One was I had to look for an industry that wasn't already dominated by older people. So I couldn't go into things like oil and gas or construction where you had strong incumbents. You know, so that kind of ruled out a few options. And then also, I needed to look for a space I could add value. So it wasn't going to be about arbitrage or rent seeking. It was going to be about solving problems. Again, that ruled out a few options. And then it also had to be a large enough market. So finally, I ended up in agriculture. And I sort of went through this deep dive in agriculture to kind of understand the lay of the land. What were the themes? What were the problems? And that took me a few months. But then I eventually started to realize that in Africa, one of the major problems is you don't have a lot of value addition. So, for example, Starbucks, you know, would make $4 a cup, but the coffee farmer would make 2 cents. And so you find that a lot of value accrues further down the value chain. So that was a thesis I wanted to play with. And so I said, all right, what value chain can I add value to? And in sort of this process of elimination, I realized that peanuts was unique for two reasons. One was that Nigeria had the third largest market in the world. So it was a $3 billion market. It had the highest consumption per capita in the world. Essentially, you know, I realized that it was a very fragmented space. Over 90% of the production was cottage-based by mom and pop vendors. And I felt that the trajectory of that industry was to become branded, to become sort of institutionalized. And I wanted to lead that charge because ultimately that creates more value for all the actors. So better quality products to the consumers, but better income to farmers because we're able to train them on better farming methods. We're able to finance them with better inputs like fertilizer, seeds. And so there was such a low underperformance in the industry. And we just essentially sort of were able to develop the industry. And that became a launching pad for other products. So today we do other products. You know, other food-related products, but that was sort of our launch into the food business.
Outstanding, outstanding. You know, what you just shared was one of the things I thought I remembered from the idea, which was this determination on your part to disrupt the value chain so that, in fact, more of the money is where it ought to be with the folks who are growing this crop. And so that's a great place for us to stop. Boy, Lottie, this has been great. I look forward to hearing more. Folks, come on back after the break, and you're going to hear some more about Lottie's early successes, some of the lessons that he learned. And this is fun. Come on back, folks, after the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back, folks. We're here with Lottie, a very successful entrepreneur from Nigeria. I hope he's going to tell us a little bit about the honor, the particular honor that he has enjoyed because of his entrepreneurial work. I know he also wants to talk about the challenges and early successes, sort of in the envelope of lessons learned. And so, Lottie, tell us a little bit about some of the lessons that you learned along the way.
Yes. So I think, you know, for me, one of the lessons I've learned is perseverance, right? I don't think it's a matter of survival and just sort of being able to wait out cycles. Because even when you're, I mean, in my case, I was exposed to a lot of like macro shifts. I mean, we experienced COVID, we experienced some serious devaluation of the currency. And I realized it's not unusual, right? Those kind of cycles come along. But essentially, the ability to survive them is why you're able to figure out the right pivot or take advantage of a boom that's around the corner. You know, so part of it is really just sticking to it, waking up every day and just taking one step after the other, right? There's that. Then also, I think I learned product market fit. At some point, we started with a, you know, the first product did well because we did it at a small scale. But we, you know, the fact that you have a few people that like your product doesn't mean you found product market fit. And there was a day in the office I had to be like, hey, guys, we don't have a product. That's why we're struggling so much. And we then had to go back to construct, you know, the product with a clear sense of what the market needs. So product market fit is critical.
So at this point, the market, when you say the early product, it was a packaging and retail sale of a basic peanut product?
Well, so a very good question, actually. So when I say product market fit, so initially we started with a sugar-coated peanut. The idea was to, you know, use the novelty as a strategy. We started with that, and we had some core, like, people that loved that product. But we found out that that product was not scalable in terms of the palette for everyone. So there was a niche product. But beyond that, there were also other factors like pricing. There were factors like margins. You know, so when you say product market fit, a lot of people think about just the consumer. But you also have to think about the sales channel, like your customer. Mm-hmm. Does the distributor want what you're pushing? Is it aligned with the value? The supply chain, for instance, some products are much more scalable from a supply chain standpoint. So product market fit, yes, is more demand facing, but I would essentially just think about it in terms of fit. What is the most viable product given all the factors? And we kind of had to work through that process in a very difficult way. So I'll give you a good example. There was one product we had that was likable, but there were supply chain constraints and it was just less profitable. And then we found another product that was less, you know, cumbersome from a production standpoint, but had even more scale. So being able to sort of find the sweet spot for our reality in terms of our capital, our infrastructure. So at the beginning, it's about finding essentially, I don't call it the path of least resistance, but I think about it this way. It's like hitting a structure and figuring out the most vulnerable part in that structure and saying, this is where I'm going to get my most progress in terms of breaking through and focusing on that,
right,
rather than hitting the most rigid part of the structure.
And let me hold you on. So you've gone through a couple of other iterations of the product in your storytelling so far. They continue to be ground nut-based products, continue to be snack-based products?
So they're all snack-based products. So for instance, we started trading maize at some point. We started selling maize to big multinationals. And what I found out was that even though maize is a very basic product, it's also a very scaled product, right? And, you know, for me, honestly, I think where I'm at today, I'm at a point where I'm like, don't reinvent the wheel where it's not necessary. You know, so for us, we're in the real sector, we do food processing. There's a good chance that if you look at what big multinationals like Nestle do, that's a starting point to a large extent. The tweak and the iteration might be 10% of that. But for someone like me, being realistic about where scale is and sort of figuring out how to be good at that gave us a lot of traction as well, right? So we found out that there's a reason why, you know, these companies focus on certain value chains. You know, certain products have better margins than certain products, right? So my kind of entrepreneurship is a lot less innovation. I mean, our innovation comes in maybe our distribution strategy. We leverage a lot more technology. But for like a core, you know, manufacturing almost type of business, it's about figuring out best practice,
right,
and executing well on that.
Execution.
And then potentially there's a maybe 5%, 10% that will come from innovation, but a lot of it is like clarity and execution.
Clarity and execution. Well, that takes some creativity, right? To have that clear vision, right? To have worked through various ways to look at your business and resolve the one that is going to be most effective way to view your vision. I consider that to be a creative activity. To find just that right perspective on what you're doing that's going to be most meaningful for folks. Is that what you mean by clarity?
No, totally. I actually think it is creativity because, like, the clarity, like being able to articulate it is in hindsight.
Yes.
Right. But when you're going through it, it presents itself as a series of problems that you think are unique to you. And it's being able to think creatively about those problems that you then, for instance, I've been looking at the same problem for maybe 2 years. And one day I choose to ask the question from a different perspective. How would Nestle handle this? That frame of mind is creativity, right? Yeah. And it wasn't apparent from the job. So I for sure it is creative problem solving because it presents itself as problems and it's in the creativity that you reframe, you look at it differently, and then you might eventually come up with a solution that is age old, but to you it's a creative revolution or like it's like an aha moment.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. In the last minute that we have for this segment, Lottie, why don't you tell us a little bit about the company itself? How many employees? If the sales are private, of course, we're not challenging that. But just give us some sense of the kind of organization that you've built there.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've done well, I would say. So we have over 200 employees and we're in over 18,000 retail stores within Nigeria.
Wow.
So there's two sides of the business. There is a like consumer packaged goods side of the business where we do things like peanuts, we do things like cashews, we do things like flavored drinks, right? And that business is pretty much your traditional CPG business. We then have a trading business because what happened was that with peanuts, we essentially got vertically integrated to fix our problems.
Right.
You know, we first of all thought we were a packaged goods business, and then we had to start dealing with farmers and helping them with the yield and all that type of stuff. So today, we have over 4,000 farmers who we buy directly from, we have a direct link to. So these are guys who we fund and we offtake everything they produce. So that puts us in a position to be a supplier to a lot of the multinationals in Nigeria. So that's a big part of the business as well, where we support farmers, offtake from farmers, and so onward supply to like traders, to like exporters, to processors. You know, that's the second part of the business. And then the third part of the business is what I would probably call agriculture, where we actually deal with farmers. So there is a profit to selling seeds to farmers, for instance, or selling them fertilizer or helping them optimize their yield. That is also a profit center for us. So today is kind of a vertically integrated business.
Outstanding.
Where most people know us for CPG, but we aggregate and trade. And we also, involved in agriculture.
Outstanding. Man, outstanding. I'm so glad we brought you onto the show to share your stories with us. We're going to come back, folks, for just a last short segment with Lottie. So please, come on back.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back, folks. We've been spending some time here with a former student of mine, Lottie Lawani, who has got a very successful business in Nigeria, where he cultivates relationships with the farmers to keep more money in their pockets as he buys their products, peanuts and other products, to market. And so it's been wonderful listening to you talk about your business, Lottie. And as I heard you talk about it, I was thinking of a phrase that, because it sounded like this was something that you were sort of pursuing as you were exploring new opportunities. The phrase is, if you really want to understand something new, first get used to it and then study it, right? First live with it and get it on your clothes and know the smell of it and hear the sounds of it. First get used to it. And that's sort of your pattern recognition, it's probably in some ways. And then study it. And there's neuroscience that says, yeah, that's the way to do it because our brains are much better at going from a whole understanding of something to the detailed understanding of it than our brains are in going from a detailed understanding to the whole. So again, as I heard your exploration, Lottie, this phrase kept coming back to me. Does that resonate with you? Does that seem to capture some of your experiences?
It does, 100%. So I think one way, as you were saying that, it reminded me of business school. You know, so when I was at Columbia, I had a friend of mine who, you know, would always complain about the concepts and that she couldn't understand it. And to be fair, I didn't really understand it either. But I kept telling her, like, you don't need to understand it. Like, at this level, you just need to know how to do it. And I'm talking about math problems, like statistics. You know, I kept saying, look, for me, I never struggled because I would just, like, figure out how to go through the problem set. And what I realized and what I understood was that the intuition would always come.
Right.
So once I understood how to execute it and I would execute it several times, I started to have an intuition about it. And I was never able to do it the other way around.
Right.
And it also kind of brings me to a concept that I think has helped me, you know, as an entrepreneur, is take it one step at a time. So mm-hmm. What is the known? Right. Start from the known to the unknown. And it's the same way you tackle a math problem. Right. What is it you know? And just kind of that process is what helps you see a pattern. Is you take one step, two steps, three steps, and then you realize, oh, there's a rhythm to it. It's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, right? But you have to go through that one step, two step, three step, and then one step, two step, three, you know. So so I totally agree. And I think it's the same with anything, whether it's leadership, whether it's strategy, you kind of have to be willing to flop and just keep moving.
Yeah, yep.
And that's the doing part of it. Nice. And that's the getting used to it part.
Very nice.
And then in retrospect, you get the insight.
Very nice. Well, in the last couple of minutes, Lottie, I would love to see if I can set the scene really, really quickly. There we are at Knox College. Folks, it's a little liberal arts school of about 1,200 students. The little coffee shop there is called the Gizmo. And I'm there with Lottie. And we're not only talking about the class that we're in together, but he's telling me that his goal is to become very, very deeply immersed in American entrepreneurial tradition because you wanted to go back to your country and be a successful entrepreneur. But that was just the first step. The second step was from that position of success to cultivate entrepreneurship all throughout your country. What a wonderful 20-year-old vision of what one's life should be all about. Where are you with that vision now, Lottie?
So I'm even more sort of convinced that that is the way to go because, you know, I look at America as an example, and today America is a huge economy because of a lot of the companies, you know, that were built by entrepreneurs. These companies create jobs, they pay taxes, and they create a ripple effect in the society. I mean, in some cases, you see that go awry, but to a large extent, business is a force for good. And, you know, I also, it's funny because while I was at Knox, I took an economics class and I kind of left that class feeling like you were either a decision maker or you were just saddled with the consequences of someone else's decision. And then there were several ways to be a decision maker, right? You could be a civic leader, you could be a political leader. But one very credible way of being a stakeholder, a decision maker in this society is to be a business person, is to be a successful business person. So if you look at most countries, you have business groups that essentially determine how the, you know, history of that country is played out. So I felt that I wanted to be in that role and that my conscience would be of value. So I still believe that very strongly. And that's why, you know, that's really why I'm passionate about entrepreneurship, because I know business can be a force for good.
Yay. Yay. Well, that's one of the reasons I love teaching in college, was to hear 20-year-old visions of how you're going to make the world a better place. And boy, I don't want to sound like a vampire, but boy, I would feed on all that wonderful enthusiasm that folks like you have got for making your mark in the world. And you have, Lottie. Man, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for your time. You got any one last word that you want to share with folks?
No, first of all, Carl, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for doing what you do, because honestly, you created a spark. And not only did you, I like your approach of thinking of entrepreneurship, where you think about it from a creative standpoint. It was a catalyst for me. And I think, it's a very valid way of thinking of entrepreneurship.
Well, I appreciate that. Good luck with all of your great adventures that are in store for you. And boy, thank you very much for being on the show with us. Adios, folks.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.